Be able to look at a character study of Pilate this evening. There was a little boy in Sunday school, and his teacher asked them to draw a picture of Jesus and his family. And so she was going around collecting all the pictures that various children had drawn. And one little boy had a picture of four people in an airplane. It's kind of unusual, she thought. So she said, "Well, you know, who is this in the airplane? That's, you know, Mary and Joseph and Jesus. Who's the fourth and why are they in an airplane?" The little boy said, "Well, the fourth one is Pontius the pilot." And so, you know, I think lots of times we have heard of this person, Pontius Pilate, but we don't know who he is. And it's an interesting study to look at and think about who was this man who figured into this story of Jesus. And he is going to be cast into really undesiring. He didn't want this position. And that's why I have labeled this or subtitled this sermon, One Tough Position. Because he didn't really want this position. He really would have been a forgotten man in history for the most part if it wasn't for being in the record or story of Jesus. We'll see. We had to change out computers tonight and see, we'll see if my clicker's going to work. I think it is, so that's good. First, I want to notice who he was. Who was Pilate? Let me share some things with you from secular history and things that we know about Pilate, and then we'll look at the story of him in Scripture. First of all, you've got to understand Palestine at the time of Jesus' crucifixion. The Jews hated the Romans, and as you're aware in New Testament studies, the Romans were holding them captive and that they had conquered the Jewish people and that they were in sovereignty over them. And so they had various rulers. And Pilate is going to be the governor, or what we call the procurator, who's going to be actually the sixth procurator of Judea and Samaria and what is also called Idumea. And that's the surrounding area, we might say. And he served between 26 and 36 A.D. Now, Pilate had served in the Roman army, was a military person. He grew up in a middle-class family. But he married well. He married a girl named Claudius Procula, who was the granddaughter of Caesar Augustus. So he married well, married into the ruling family, you might say. And because of this, he was given a position. He didn't get his position because of his leadership ability. He got his position because of whom he married. And he had finished his military service, and he gets this position. And really, nobody wanted this position because it was kind of considered the armpit of the Roman Empire. And it really wasn't a place that you could succeed at because you had to constantly be trying to stop the revolts and the uprisings of the Jewish people. And Rome really only wanted one thing, peace. They didn't want to have any problems. And so it was a very unenviable position. And his job was to keep peace. And as governor, Pilate was in charge of administering civil and military duties. Now he worked in conjunction with the local Jewish leader who was also appointed by the Romans, named Herod. And of course, you're aware of how Herod was a vicious and evil ruler himself. Pilate had an extremely violent past. Both Philo and Josephus paint a very stark portrait of the Roman ruler. He's characterized as oppressive, greedy, stubborn, and cruel. Philo specifically catalogs him as saying that he was known for violence, for being a thief, and for assaults and his abusive behavior. For example, when he first came into power, he wanted to introduce into the city of Jerusalem certain images of Caesar to be worshipped. Well, you know that went over really well for the Jewish people. Here we're going to bring in these statues of Caesar and require people to worship them. But it didn't work, and they immediately began to revolt and be upset about that. And he eventually meets with the leaders after making them wait about 5 days, and they tell him that if he doesn't take them down, then they're going to offer and they present to him their throats. That's how serious they were. They said, you either take them down or you're going to have to kill us. Well, here he has, in the beginning of his ministry, a very difficult situation. He doesn't want to get back to Rome that he killed all the Jewish leaders. But he doesn't want to have to compromise and take down the statues. But because of pressure, he relents and has the statues removed. Later on, there is a riot outside in Jerusalem, and they're protesting and rioting for some other things that he had done involving pagan. He had 3 coins, for example, minted during his time with pagan inscriptions on them and things. And he has his soldiers go out dressed as common civilians and take clubs and swords, and while they're out there in the midst of them, to all of a sudden start beating and killing the people who are rioting. And then one time he takes, and this had led to that riot, he had stolen money from the temple treasury, money that was set aside for that, and used them for some pagan purposes. Well, this kept causing problems. And he's known then for his violence and his brutality. In fact, in Luke chapter 13, Jesus even mentions in his public ministry that Pilate had mingled the blood of certain people with sacrifices. And so he mentions there, the mentioning of Pilate mixing the blood of temple sacrifices with that of the Galileans whom he had murdered. And so this was desecration of the Jewish worship, and it was murdering people. So Pilate was very brutal, and he's very inept. Which is interesting, because Pilate is going to be known as the coward who is afraid to put Jesus to death. Pilate, as we're going to read the text in a moment and get into it, Pilate is going to over and over again say, I find no charge of guilt in this man. He is innocent. He keeps trying to get out of it. It wasn't that Pilate had a problem killing somebody because he killed a lot of people. But it involved the idea that he, and I think this is why the biblical witness talks a lot about what Pilate said, Pilate, even a cruel man like Pilate, recognized the travesty of justice and the innocence of Jesus. And so Pilate is someone who is eventually, after Jesus, which really didn't cause a big stir with Rome because he's able to put Jesus to death to satisfy the Roman, to satisfy the Jewish people. Later on in 36 AD, it involves an issue where he has a bunch of Samaritans up on Mount Gerizim murdered. And after he has them murdered, he had been called back to Rome before Jesus, and he makes some peace there. And then after Jesus, he has this Samaritan issue, and that Rome says that's enough. And they eventually exiled him to Vienna in Gaul. And according to tradition, Pilate ends his life with self-murder. He commits suicide. And so that's who Pilate was. Now, notice secondly, his confrontation with Jesus. The Jews didn't have the power of capital punishment, though they did still stone some people like Stephen. But they needed Rome politically to carry out this execution. The Jewish leaders didn't want to go just stone Jesus, it seems, because then that they knew Jesus had a lot of popularity with the people. So they needed Rome to put Jesus to death. And you remember, the Jewish leaders are putting Jesus on trial in a very hurried fashion. This is all taking place through the night. Remember, they tried to do it very secretly, and it's also very illegally. And they wake Pilate up early in the morning on Friday morning. And so let's read some of these passages. I'm going to read some lengthier readings tonight before we make some application. But I want to turn, first of all, to Mark 15. And notice in this passage where we have this initial description. Now, there are three gospel accounts, Mark 15, Luke 23, and Matthew 27, which detail this early morning meeting, and John does a little bit, but we're only going to look at a couple of these. As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders, the scribes, and the whole council. They bound Jesus and led him away, delivered him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him, "You have said so." And the chief priest accused him of many things. And Pilate again asked him, "Have you no answer to make? How many charges they bring against you?" But Jesus made no further answer, so that Pilate was amazed. Let's read Luke's account of this as well. Luke 23. And notice what Luke says about this similar incident. Verse 1. "Then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, 'We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute, pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ the King.'" Notice the charge they try to bring. Figures into that political discussion. "You need to put Jesus to death, Pilate, because he's claiming to be a king." And ultimately the reason he consents to this is because they say he's a king and you say there's no king but Caesar. And so this is insurrection. This is a political revolt that Jesus is trying to bring. And that's what the Jewish people are trying to say, and that's how they're trying to convince Pilate. Because Pilate wants to keep peace and he wants to keep down any other king but Caesar. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." In other words, I don't see him leading a big political uprising. I don't see where he's done any murders, any crimes, anything that I should put him to death for. But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place." Now, after this early morning meeting, Pilate's in this difficult position. He knows there's no fault in Jesus. He knows, Matthew says, that they've turned him over because of envy. He knows that this is just a political fight within the Jewish community, that they're jealous, they're greedy because of Jesus' popularity, because of he has gotten out of sorts with the ruling Jewish people of the Sanhedrin, the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And so he's thinking, how do I solve this? I don't want to put an innocent man to death. He also, in the back of his mind, it seems that he's fearful because Jesus keeps saying, and people are saying, "This is the Son of God." And eventually we'll read in a moment where Jesus claims before Pilate, "I am the Son of God." His wife has a dream and sends a messenger over and says, "Don't have anything to do with that man." So in the back of his mind, it's like he's thinking, what if this guy's telling the truth? And you know all the stories going around about him doing miracles, about him feeding the 5,000, about him resurrecting Lazarus. I mean, people just, they know that. They know all these things. He's done all these miracles. He's resurrected these people. And now Pilate's thinking, how did I get this guy in my courtroom? Now, Pilate had just gotten called back to Rome, just got in trouble by Tiberius Caesar, and his main order is, "Pilate, if you don't keep peace, then you're going to lose your job." And it's Passover weekend. Thousands of Jews are there in Jerusalem. The only reason Pilate is in Jerusalem, his palace was in Caesarea. But he'd come to Passover weekend in order to keep peace. That's why he was there, to keep peace. And so he's got this, maybe God is doing this man. What, you know, I could really offend God. Maybe, and then he's got his wife. I mean, you know, hey, your wife's telling you something? Saying, "Don't have anything to do with this man. You're going to get in trouble. I had a dream in the night." He's thinking, well, I need to listen to my wife. She had this dream. Maybe this is sin from God. And then he's got the Jewish leaders who saying, "If you don't put this man to death, we're going to tell Caesar, and your job is out of here, big boy." Now, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Now, he's going to try to get out of it. He's a politician at his heart. And what he wants to do is try to keep as many people happy as possible. So he's going to try to get himself out of it. Now, he's already tried to get out of it by saying, he's innocent, why are y'all bringing him to me? He's not even giving any defense for it. But that's not good enough. So then he says, well, hey, when he hears that he's a Galilean, he says, let's send him to Herod. I don't want to have to deal with it. Let's let Herod deal with it. And so in Luke 23, verses 5 through 12, he hears that he's a Galilean, and he sends him to Herod. Verse 8, when Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him because he had heard about him and was hoping to see some sign or miracle done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldier treated him with contempt and mocked him and arrayed him splendid clothing and sent him back to Pilate. So Herod didn't help him out, really. But Herod and Pilate did become friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with one another. So Herod doesn't deal with him. Herod just roughs him up a little bit and sends him back to Pilate. Now, let's read what he does further and what he tries to do. Let's read Matthew 27 at this time. Matthew 27. So his next attempt is going to involve several ideas. The first idea is, it was tradition. Tradition that you release a prisoner on Passover. And so he says, all right, we got to release one prisoner. Maybe we can release Jesus. Now at the feast, verse 15, of the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they then had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, who do you want me to release to you? Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ? For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. He's thinking Barabbas, this famous, we might call him like the FBI top wanted list. Bible calls him a murderer. He was an insurrectionist. He was all these things. Interestingly enough, some manuscripts, one of the older manuscripts, actually has Barabbas having a first name of Jesus, which was a common name. So it could have been that he's saying here in this passage, do you want me to release to you Jesus, the son of a man? That's what Barabbas means. Son of Bar, son of Abbas, man, son of a man. Or do you want me to release to you Jesus, the son of God? And so he's saying, who do you want? And he's thinking, most likely, it seems Pilate is thinking, surely they will not choose this notorious, famous criminal versus this man who has done nothing but heal people, help people, and teach people. But the crowd is bloodthirsty. And they want Jesus. Verse 18, or verse 19, besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, have nothing to do with the righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas. So the leader said, you know, they go around to the crowd and say, hey, you want Jesus? You want Jesus? Let this other guy go. And so they all asked for Jesus. Pilate said to them, then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? And they all said to him, let him be crucified. For he said, why? What evil has he done? But they shouted all the more, let him be crucified. Now in, continuing to read, we'll go to John in just a moment. But in Luke 20, or Matthew 27, 24, so when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water. Notice that phrase, a riot was beginning. What is Pilate's main goal? To keep peace. He saw he wasn't getting anywhere. He knew that problems were coming. So he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourself. So then he tries to just excuse himself. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And all the people answered, his blood be on us and on our children. And he released for them Barabbas, having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. Let's read John's account now. Let's begin in John 18, verse 28. Now, John, you know, John does things differently. He doesn't break it up into the two meetings with the inner break with Herod. He kind of includes it all in one meeting. And that's just how he told the story. He's not contradicting Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But he's just telling us one thing about this interaction with Pilate. So let's read it. They led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to meet with them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." In other words, I tell you, he's doing something evil. The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show about what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or do others say it to you about me?" So Jesus is questioning him. Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Now this is where Jesus really turns the tables and puts Pilate on trial. "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world." Now Jesus is really addressing the issue. "Pilate, I'm not doing any political insurrection. We don't have swords. We don't want to fight. My kingdom is not of this world. I am bringing a spiritual kingdom." Pilate said to them, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth." So his purpose is to say, "I am a king." He's coming with the kingdom. "Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" What is truth? What does it really matter, Jesus? What is, does it, can I really know that you're right and the Jews are wrong? And all the, you think about his pagan idolatry and the Jewish one God and the Christian now coming into Jesus and what he's saying about God and all this swirling around of all these different beliefs. And you got the Greeks and what they believed, and the Romans, and he's saying, "What is truth? What is truth? Jesus, does it really matter?" After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and said, "I find no guilt in him, but you have a custom that I should release one man." That's when he talks about this issue with Barabbas that we read in Matthew. Chapter 19, verse 1. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns, put it on his head, arrayed him in purple robe. They came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They struck him. Now Pilate went out to them again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Now it's likely that this is Pilate's last attempt to get Jesus from being crucified. So he turned him over to be scourged. He has him arrayed in this kingly garb that really makes him look comical. And he presents him to them as a beaten, afflicted, suffering man. And says, "What threat could this man offer to you?" And the obvious answer is, he is no threat to you. He's not your king. This is no issue. Why should we kill him? But even that is not enough. The chief priests and the officers saw him. They cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And then Pilate says, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." And the Jews answered, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die because he has made himself the Son of God." And notice this, verse 8. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. So his wife's telling him that she's having dreams about him. He knows about the miracles. And now they're saying he says he's the Son of God. Pilate is afraid. He's fearful. And then, verse 17, Pilate's talking to Jesus about the authority. Do you have authority to release you, authority to crucify? Verse 11, Jesus answered, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given to you from above." Jesus says, "It's not you, Pilate." Back in John 10, 17 and 18, Jesus says, "No one takes my life, I lay it down." From then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, "If you release this man," notice this phrase, "you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." And when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out, sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement in Aramaic, Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." And Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Really a blasphemous statement by the Jewish leaders. Isn't it ironic how they will join up with the people they hated if it works for common goals? "We have no king but Caesar." Of course, all through the Old Testament, who was supposed to be the Jewish king? Jesus. And God in the Old Testament, and ultimately the Messiah. "But we have no king but Caesar." And they hated the occupation of Rome. So he delivered them over to be crucified. Now, what are some mistakes? That's the story of Pilate. What are some mistakes? Four quick lessons. Number one, Pilate neglected justice. The first thing we learn from Pilate is that we need to be willing to stand up for what's right. Stand up for what's right. In Proverbs 18, verse 5, it says, "It is not good to be partial to the wicked and so deprive the innocent of justice." Instead of taking a stand for Jesus, he bows to the will of the crowd. It is much easier to let others decide a person's fate rather than step up and step out and speak up for what's right. I think about Amos chapter 5, verse 24, where the Bible says, "Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream." You know, we need to be careful. Pilate had the opportunity to stand up for what was right. I read it. Y'all read it with me. How many times, I didn't count them up, but how many times did he say, "He's innocent. He's innocent. No guilt in him." But he didn't stand up for justice. You know, you and I sometimes, maybe not in a courtroom, maybe not as a governor, but we are called to stand up for justice. We know what we're doing is either right or wrong. We know if we're treating someone right or wrong. And it may be the politically correct thing to do. It may make it a lot easier on us. It may save us our job. It may keep us in good graces with our family. But if we know it's not right, we shouldn't do it. Pilate knew it wasn't right, but he neglected justice. The next thing he did is he yielded to a crowd. The Bible talks a lot about this idea of giving in to a crowd and how, for example, Exodus 23, verse 2, you shall not fall in with many to do evil. Don't follow a crowd to do evil. We need to understand that Pilate makes a mistake when he allowed the majority to rule. And we are thankful for majority rule in the government, in our nation, democracy and things. But as Christians, we need to understand that it's not always best to follow the majority. And we need to often be willing to swim upstream in a downstream world. The next thing is he refused to seek truth. Pilate's question, what is truth? What is truth? He had truth right before him. John 14, 6, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Jesus was truth. Jesus says, "I am the King and I have come. The purpose I have come for is to bear witness to that truth." Jesus said in John chapter 8, verse 31, if you abide in my words, you will know the truth. And the truth will set you free. And so if we've got to know the truth, Pilate had the truth. He listened to the truth of Jesus talk about his goals and his kingdom, but he ignored it. He didn't investigate it. He didn't search it out. He didn't think about it. You know, we live in a world today that is very similar to the world Pilate lived in its political, in its religious diversity. You think about Pilate had a world that was had pagan worship and all these various idols. He had the Roman idols, Greek idols. He had the Jewish God, now Jesus, who was claiming to be a God. He had all these various things. There was atheists and Epicureans and Stoics and all these different beliefs. Pilate said, I don't really want to think about it. Pilate was, and this is the way so many people think, I'm more interested, and we talk about it being political, not that all politicians are that way, but Pilate was like a true politician, wasn't he? What is best for me? And that's how a lot of people are. What, you know, the world is all this religious division out there, and they think, I don't really care about trying to figure out what truth is. I just want to know what's going to be easiest and best for me. Pilate wanted to preserve his own job in his own lifestyle of power. And so he refused to seek truth. And finally, he succeeded, but he failed. He succeeded, but he failed. What I mean by that is that he succeeded temporarily. He saved his job. He will lead and have that position for another 3 years, and he didn't lose his job because of Jesus. He will satisfy the Jewish leaders. He will keep peace on Passover. He saved his own neck. But he failed in the long run, didn't he? He ends up committing suicide. He ends up bitter and not knowing the Lord. How many people today succeed temporarily in this life? They take the easiest course. They will lie. They will cheat. They will do whatever it takes so that they have their what they want. Their power, their money, their greed. They succeed temporarily, but fail in the long run, both physically and spiritually. Pilate's goals were on the earth, and he eventually failed. There was a good quote that I wanted to read from one author. James Stewart, writing about Pilate, said this, "Everyone who studies this narrative has the strange feeling that the tables are being turned before their very eyes, that what they are seeing is not Jesus on trial before the crowd, but Pilate on trial before Jesus. In fact, as Pilate stands with the Son of God in those hours, it is as if Jesus, his searchlight is probing Pilate's soul, revealing Pilate's true character for all the world to see." But then notice what this author says. "But every soul who stands where Pilate stood at some time in their life is face to face with Jesus in the same place of decision." You see, when you think about this story and you realize why Pilate was in this, you realize that Pilate helps all of us see that really Pilate was the one on trial. He was the one that was going to have to make the decision. As the Lord said, you don't have any authority over me. It really came down to what Pilate was going to do. And then that leads to the final question that really everybody must face when they hear the story of the gospel and the story of Jesus is put before them. What will you do with Jesus? What are you going to do with Jesus? You see, Pilate had a tough choice. And a lot of people are put in tough positions by Jesus. They may have to offend their wife, like Pilate had a situation with. They may have to go against the crowd. They may have to lose their job. They may have to lose their power and their influence and all the things that Pilate might have had to give up. A lot of people, when they face Jesus, have a choice to make. Do I choose Him and take the difficult path, or do I reject Him and take the easy path? I think Pilate is there to help show us that it's often tough to choose Jesus. It takes courage to choose Jesus. But if we don't choose Jesus, our life is going to derail, and our life will never have the hope and the promise that Jesus provides. If you're in need of the gospel this evening, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, or if you want to rededicate your life, come as together we stand and as we sing.